random nigh. Her jaw ached, and she realized she was grinding her teeth. She ignored the fuel warning and boosted thruster power further as the cruiser carrier sped away. Nothing that was happening seemed right. None of the tactics made sense. None of her enemies seemed real. And Shadow Wing's carrier shouldn't have been there at all. But though she was short on fuel and shields, she hadn't fired a torpedo today. Sometimes simple answers were best. Five. The dance went on. The Lodestar crept closer to the destroyer with each pass, bringing its point defense cannons online and loosing sparkling trails of ion light beside denser turbo laser beams. The bridge shook steadily under unrelenting enemy fire, and many of the crew had departed from battle stations elsewhere or harnessed themselves to their stations. Occasionally, a new Republic starfighter would flash across the main viewport, navigating the particle storm on its way to target the Star Destroyer's weaponry. The enemy still had not deployed its TIE fighters, had not deployed Shadow Wing.
"Divert all shield power to our port screens," the captain cried. "We can't sustain this hammering for long."
"Sir, if another ship appears or they launch homing missiles..."
This from the woman at the nav station. "Not your place to speak up," a dull voice in Quell's mind scolded.
"If either of those things happens, we'll shift the power right back, hmm?"
Captain Gigi Nivik waved a talon in the air and stuck his head toward the viewport. The captain didn't care about Shadow Wing. No one but Quell seemed to realize that the battle they were fighting wasn't the battle they needed to win. If Tenzin was right, if the 204th was involved, what they were seeing from the destroyer was nonsensical, a waste of resources. Unless it was something more sinister. There were questions in her mind. Why had Shadow Wing come? How had Tenzin known? Where were the fighters? But those questions, like the voice that had rebuked the nav officer, were passionless when they should have been insistent. Instead, thoughts of Shadow Wing led to the irrational certainty that they had come for her. That her comrades had come to retrieve her now that her secret was revealed and she had no place in the New Republic, outside a prison or a tribunal courtroom. Shadow Wing would take her away, return her to the life of duty and family and horror she had escaped. And it even made a sort of sense if Aiden had told them everything. And she would fight with them for the rest of her days, engaged in pointless slaughter until she met her doom.
"If you're not gonna help, get off the bridge!"
someone snarled, shouldering her aside. The metal of the Lodestar groaned, and the deck tilted. She fell to her knees, and her fingers smashed against a control panel.
"We may be smaller, but our targeting systems appear superior. They must have sustained damage before the fight,"
the captain said.
"However, they will still outlast us. Sooner or later, we'll need our fighters back from Katadra, or we'll have to withdraw to Troyth."
The pain in her hand drove away the worst of the self-indulgent thoughts. She managed to suppress the rest, and thoughts of Shadow Wing's plan rose up.
"What is happening at Katadra?" she asked. "Do we have any information? Can we get a scope?"
"Star Destroyer is struggling to hit the X-Wings from the Troyth garrison, along with the A and Y-Wing."
The speaker held one ear to his headset. He was linked into the tactical center, but ignoring Quell.
"If we can give the fighters an opening, they might be able to concentrate fire, do some real damage."
"You're fighting the wrong battle," Quell wanted to tell them. But the captain was replying to the TAC center relay, and she realized she couldn't blame him. Her insistence that Shadow Wing was manipulating the situation had little credibility, and worse, little obvious relevance. The Star Destroyer had to be the Lodestar's focus, because with all sensors flooded by jamming signals, there was no other focus to be found. Unless she could find it. She nursed her hand and looked from monitors to system charts to the captain. No one seemed to notice as she hurried off the bridge and headed back toward the hangar. 6.
Congratulations!
Nath Tenzint called as two torpedoes struck the Star Destroyer. The destructive cascade of flame that followed lapped at the hull and broke against the command module like waves against a lighthouse.
You win! Shields were breaking there after all!
The droid squealed in reply. Nath didn't smile as he dipped his starboard side and surveyed the devastation. He'd done a lot of damage, sure, but a Star Destroyer was a lot of ship, and this destroyer was in no danger of going down.
We'll make another pass when you find me another weak point,
he said.
And the kids should be watching out for us, not the other way around.
He put his strength into the control yoke, coaxing the obstinate Y-Wing away from the enemy vessel. A point defense cannon flashed and left a trail across his vision, but it was so far off the mark that it seemed impossible he was the target. The enemy's gunnery was another aspect of the fight that wasn't quite right, one of too many to add up. The droid stuttered and alert. Nath looked above and saw Will's A-Wing gliding into a protective position.
See?
He said.
Will's off his game, but he still knows his job.
Another point defense beam tore through ether nearer his ship. He winced and swung the Y-Wing drunkenly from side to side, attempting to prevent the destroyer from locking on and obliterating him in a clean burst. The strangeness of the battle wouldn't save him from a well-timed shot. He considered his next destination. He'd done his part communicating with the Lodestar, though he couldn't be sure his message had reached Quell. He'd stayed with Will all the way back from Katadra. He could flee now with a clear conscience, and it didn't seem a bad idea. He could fake a malfunction, get somewhere safe, and let the rest of the battle play out as it would. Grandmother was dead. The people who'd slaughtered his old squadron were dead. If he stuck around for more Shadow Wing, he'd be likely to join Rika and Piter and the others. He had a course back to Troyth plotted, and had decided what subsystems to ask T5 to mysteriously disable when he saw Will's A-Wing dip a wing in his direction and begin turning back toward the destroyer. The boy was moving slowly, slow enough to make him an easy target, but also slow enough for Nath to follow. The Y-Wing was over a decade old, with half its parts dating to the Clone Wars, and the other half salvaged from airspeeders and junkyard freighters, modified by Nath's own hand. No one would find it implausible that a cooling leak took Nath out of the battle. Even Aiden wouldn't dock his pay for that. One more round, he muttered, and turned to pursue Will. Then we'll see. Seven. She'd left Meteor Squadron behind. The starfighters had become sparks leaping and spiraling in the distance. Then the sparks had faded, with only the occasional flash to suggest at least one combatant on each side remained. Then the flashes stopped altogether. Chasna Chattuck should have cared what that meant, but all that seemed to matter was that she could quit checking her aft cam and focus on pursuing Shadow Wing's cruiser carrier. The enemy vessel's thruster burn was enough to navigate by, though the craft gained distance from the B-Wing with every moment that passed. Truth was, a lumbering assault fighter's engines weren't equal to a cruiser carrier's. Chas had already closed her strike foils to conserve power and ameliorate heat buildup. She'd shut down the safety warnings on her console. She'd even considered ejecting ordnance to reduce the ship's mass, rejecting the plan only because, in some dusty corner of her mind, she had a memory of long-dead Fatime telling her, in similar circumstances, that the math wouldn't add up. Nath had accused her of not wanting to face Shadow Wing. Maybe that was true. She wasn't ready for Alphabet to win the war and be forgotten like everyone else. But she was absolutely ready to catch her target and spit out enough firepower to smash a small moon. She'd had a rotten day. She'd lost what few credits she'd scraped together at Winkers. She'd been abandoned by her own squadron mid-battle. She still didn't know why. And Quell. Screw Quell. Pretend she's on that carrier with the rest of the Death Star Brigade. She increased the volume on her sound system as a Weequay screamed a ballad about living as a hut laborer. She'd heard a rumor that the song was a true story, and the Weequay's last act before his own execution had been to record the tale. Part of her preferred to think of it as a lie. The thrusters of the cruiser carrier were getting brighter again. Somehow, she was closing the distance. She leaned into the pressure of acceleration, scanning her console for anything that might tell her how she'd managed that particular miracle. Her engine output hadn't changed. Jammed scanners still showed nothing about her foe. She squinted and tried to make out the shape of the enemy ship beyond the thrusters themselves, and tasted her lip with her tongue as she realized what was happening. She fell back into her seat and gripped her control yoke. The cruiser carrier had hit Cerberon's debris field and had decelerated in order to maneuver among the asteroids and lost comets and shattered worlds. All Chas had to do now was not slow down. 30 seconds later, she was speeding beneath a jagged hunk of metallic rock that reflected the radiance of the Cerberon black hole. Chas shielded her eyes and didn't stop, didn't adjust her course as the asteroid flashed past. Her deflectors flickered as she passed through a dust band, microscopic particles bouncing off her screens or converted into crackling plasma. She barely rotated her airfoil in time to avoid scraping a hunk of yellow ice barely larger than her ship. Steering out of the way properly would have cost precious seconds. The cruiser carrier blossomed against the darkness until its thrusters became her sun. Without scanners, she had no way to know for sure when she was in firing range, but she armed her warheads and respread her strike foils in preparation. She tried to remember the optimal range of a Quasar Fire-class vessel's turbo lasers. Not too much farther than the B-Wing's proton torpedoes, she thought. Her breath quickened when the first flash of emerald ripped across her vision. The Weequay was singing the final verse of his story. The carrier's rear guns fired again, releasing enough energy to vaporize her through her soap bubble shields. She didn't die. Close enough, she decided. Close enough. The B-Wing jolted as she loosed her torpedoes, the kick from the launch battling its continued acceleration. She fired a second volley, and her head whipped hard enough to lash pain down her spine. As she fired a third time, she pulsed her ion cannons and watched the radiant energy clusters speed toward the cruiser carrier. She was drifting a port from the off-center recoil, and she strained against her harness, looking out the canopy, waiting to see the carrier ignite and its thrusters go dark. Her console screeched at her. She smelled smoke and grease as her acceleration dropped to zero. The torpedoes and ion blasts sailed beneath the cruiser carrier and did no damage. Out of fuel and out of chances, Chasna Chattuck stared into the debris field as her B-Wing floated uncontrolled among the junk of the Cerberon system. She screamed louder than her music and pounded her fist against the canopy. As a TIE fighter raced by on its way to rejoin its mothership, too busy to put a lone New Republic pilot out of her misery. Chapter 12. Long Shadows of Astronomical Objects. 1. Quell took long strides through the hangar, but didn't run. If she ran, she would be noticed. If she ran, she would tumble onto the deck, skidding and bleeding as the lodestar shook from turbo laser blasts. She circumvented load lifters and fuel pumps, remembering a boy she'd once seen crushed in an accident aboard the Star Destroyer Pursuer after rebels had blown a passing asteroid, launching fire and debris into the hull. If she was going to die today, and the odds of that were increasing steadily, she hoped to die a pilot. She mounted the boarding ramp of the rusty freighter, hurried through the access corridor to the cockpit, and performed a cursory pre-flight check before igniting the engine and activating repulsors. With its squadrons already in flight, The Lodestar's hangar doors had been closed for combat, but as a squadron commander, Quell had the codes to open them. She inputted the sequence and watched with satisfaction as the armored gates slid away to expose the void of space. In the Empire, no one would have waited to nullify her clearance after an accusation like the one Aiden had delivered. But for all the New Republic Navy's official embrace of rules and protocol, the Lodestar was crewed by the same rebels as always. For once, that fact was in her favor. The battleship quaked. The freighter jerked in response, its repulsors whining as Quell attempted to keep it from smashing directly into a bulkhead or, worse, something liable to explode. She smelled ozone, power cells overloading, and ignored the odor, ignited a single thruster, and maneuvered the vessel through the aperture and into open space. The bay doors were shutting behind her as she set a course away from the Lodestar under the sickly light of turbo laser fire. She was intent enough on her task that she started when a voice asked,
"Where are you taking us exactly?"
The interrogation droid floated through the cockpit doorway. She'd forgotten about the machine. She'd assumed that it had accompanied Aiden to the Lodestar's med bay. "I have a mission," she said, which was neither true nor an answer to the question. "Why are you still here?" She banked hard, attempting to elude any enemy targeting sensors operating on visual input. The freighter had exited the Lodestar outside the Star Destroyer's primary field of fire, but an eager gunner might still find it. She heard the droid's servos whirring in midair, then a thud and a harsh, low cry of pain.
"We're still here because I was told I shouldn't walk to the med bay," Cairn Aiden hissed.
Quell swiveled her neck and saw the intelligence officer leaning heavily against the doorframe behind ITO. He looked as bruised and gaunt as the last time she'd seen him, but his expression was focused and alert.
"You were supposed to be gone," she said,
and her voice sounded like a child's.
"I'm not," Aiden said. "Tell me what's happening."
She delayed answering long enough to bring the ship around, attempting to position the Lodestar between herself and the Star Destroyer. Replies flashed through her brain, and she struck them down one by one. Aiden didn't need to know about Lark and Chaddock and Tenzin confronting her in the hangar. He didn't care about her, or what was going to happen to her in the New Republic.
"It's Shadow Wing," she said, eyes on the viewport. "I'm not sure how or why, but they're attacking Cerberon. They ignored the trap. I think I can find their weak point."
She wondered if he would ask more. It told her something about the severity of his pain when he didn't.
"Fine," he said. "Do what you have to. I'll see if I can get an escape pod working."
I doubt it, Quell thought. She considered arguing, asking if he wanted to return to the Lodestar, but Cairn Aiden had never been shy about demanding what he felt he deserved. Half delirious or not, he'd made his choice. She heard him shuffle back into the access corridor. The hum of the interrogation droid remained.
"If you want to help me, then help," Quell snapped.
She thumbed a switch on the console, flipping it up and down until the secondary display came to life.
"Otherwise, go."
The interrogation droid went. Quell brought up a system chart and adjusted her heading again, accelerating until she was en route to the debris field and away from the clashing battleships. Warning lights appeared periodically, but they were nothing she hadn't seen during the flight to Katadra. 2 minutes later, she glimpsed TIE squadrons heading her way from the debris field. She wasn't surprised at all. Two. Chasna Chaddock stared into the burning eye of Cerberon as high-pitched scatterbop played and her B-wing drifted through the debris field. No, she corrected herself, not through the debris field. We are the debris now. She fingered her weapons trigger, waiting for the battle to return to her, for a TIE fighter to fly into her field of view. No TIE fighter came. Her fuel meter did not change, Her breathing quickened. She began to wonder what would happen if the New Republic lost and no one came to find her. Three. The TIEs swept in without a battle cry or a cold wind to herald their approach. They were dozens strong, turning the Lodestar like it was a sailing ship caught in a current, forcing it to expose its weakened screens to the full fury of the Star Destroyer, lest it be vivisected by the Imperial squadrons. The TIEs cut down X-Wings and chased Will Lark through the battleship's killing field, forcing him to abandon Nath Tanzant in order to buy a few more seconds of life. Shadow Wing had finally shown itself, and the fight that had seemed bound for a straightforward New Republic victory was now a desperate struggle for survival.
Nath!
Will cried.
Can you hear me?
The enemy had dropped the jamming field seconds after the TIE's arrival. With the Shadow Wing squadrons active, there were no more secrets to hide.
I can hear you,
Nath answered. Will felt the strain and irritation in his voice.
Got your last message. Guess they didn't take the bait, huh?
No,
Will said. A cannon volley flashed across his canopy, close enough to send his deflectors cascading through the visible light spectrum. Two TIEs pursued him, and he raced toward the beams of the Star Destroyer in the hope of forcing them to fall back.
I don't know if they realized the asteroid was a trap or...
He cut himself off as overlapping voices crackled through the comm speaker. A desperate plea for help from one of the X-Wings, overlaid with a message to stand by from the Lodestar. Will listened to the din and added to it.
New Republic forces, this is Will Lark of Alphabet Squadron. The enemy fighters are from an elite unit and should be treated with...
He broke off for the second time as he was forced to navigate the gap between turbo laser beams, one from the Lodestar, one from the Destroyer. Sweat crept around his left eye and slipped under the lid, stinging, but he didn't dare blink it away. His pursuers fell back.
They're not listening to you, brother,
Nath said.
You got a plan, though. I'd love to hear it.
Not a plan, exactly.
Will spared his scanner a glance, saw a gap in the swarm of TIEs, and rushed into the blackness. He'd lost track of whether the Star Destroyer was above and the Lodestar was below, or vice versa.
That destroyer? You seen it hit anything but the Lodestar yet? Don't think so. Why?
Will cleared the corridor between the two ships and spotted a trio of TIEs harrying an X-Wing. He loosed a flurry of particle bolts, none of which he expected to hit their targets at such a distance. But the shots bought the X-Wing room to maneuver, and he wished the pilot well before veering to port, trying to shake a missile lock.
Enemy point defense weapon,
he managed to breathe. The Lodestar suddenly filled his view and he pulled up. The missile behind him detonated against the battleship's hull, and he forced down an apology. The armor should hold, he told himself.
The Star Destroyer's targeting is way off, and I don't think it was the jamming. Could be. Let's say only its turbo lasers are fully functional. What do we do about that when we've got 50 TIEs on our tails?
Will tried to focus, thinking back to fights over Pandem Nigh and in the Auradol cluster. Thinking of Endor, when the Rebel fleet had tangled with Imperial Star Destroyers rather than face the firepower of the Death Star.
Close distance, near as we can get, and concentrate on pummeling that destroyer. Maybe the TIEs will go a little easier on us when they risk blasting their own ship.
He heard Nath's laugh overlap with another panicked cry from an X-Wing.
Or maybe the TIEs will switch focus to the Lodestar,
Nath said.
Or maybe the destroyer's point defenses are just fine after all.
Maybe,
Will agreed.
Are you with me?
He finally located the Y-Wing on his scanner. Nath was skimming the surface of the Lodestar, adjusting course to return to Will's side.
I'm with you,
Nath said.
Let's grab some friends and blow that monster.
Four. Quell had passed through the outermost edge of the debris field, penetrating thousands of kilometers into the vast cloud band spiraling into the Cerberon black hole. But her freighter's scanners were active again, and despite the chaos of the field and the poor calibration of her instruments, she was able to identify her target. She'd already traced back the relevant trajectories and knew where to look. The cruiser carrier was keeping its distance from the battle, but it wasn't hiding. She'd pieced Shadow Wing's attack plan together en route, for all the good it would do her now. The Star Destroyer was a decoy, barely armed, most likely, certainly undercrewed, and probably rescued from New Republic forces in a battle somewhere along the galactic outer rim. Quell wasn't privy to every intelligence communique that made it to Cerberon, but she'd have heard if a captured destroyer had been retaken from a New Republic shipyard. That would have raised alarms. The destroyer had been sent against Troyth to busy that planet's defenders while the cruiser carrier took the long way around the system, picking off divided New Republic forces and approaching from a position of strength to unleash its fighters upon a weakened lodestar. That much was obvious now. The fighters had ignored her as they'd sailed past, rightly prioritizing Troyth over her sputtering freighter. What the 204th intended to do after the lodestar was obliterated, however, was beyond Quell. The fighter wing didn't have the firepower to take down Troyth's defenses, though a second wave of Imperial attackers wasn't out of the question. If Shadow Wing was able to sabotage Cerberon's remaining long-range comm stations, that second wave wouldn't even need to hurry. Cerberon would remain vulnerable indefinitely. Or maybe Shadow Wing had come for revenge, to wreck the lodestar and return home. That wasn't a plan Grandmother would have approved. Quell doubted it would have occurred to the woman, so utterly practical in her devotion to the Empire. But she didn't know who was in command nowadays. The attack on Cerberon was the sort of aggressive, wild ploy she'd have expected from rebels during the worst days before Endor. It was hard to imagine Major Rassus or the other command candidates concocting it. It was hard to imagine any Shadow Wing pilot agreeing to it. Quell laughed breathlessly. Earlier, she'd thought that the unit had come to reclaim her, to take her home, but even Shadow Wing had changed beyond recognition. She refocused on her flight as the cruiser carrier drew nearer on her scanners. The Star Destroyer was a decoy, undercrewed and damaged. The Lodestar and the remaining fighters were strong enough to take it down, and Shadow Wing was willing to sacrifice it. That meant the cruiser carrier was the 204th's escape plan, the only way the TIE fighters could jump to light speed and depart the system. It meant the carrier was a vulnerability. According to her readings, the vessel was undefended. She attempted to send an encrypted transmission back to the Lodestar with coordinates and full data on the cruiser carrier. She wasn't certain whether it would get through, given interference from the debris field and the battle itself, or, assuming it did get through, whether the bridge crew would even listen. At best, reinforcements were minutes out, enough time for the carrier to adjust its strategy once it spotted Quell. All right, she thought. What does this junk heap have for weapons? She powered down the ship's non-critical systems as she studied the displays. The cruiser carrier was massive enough to be easily distinguished from the asteroids, but the freighter might float well inside the enemy's sensor range, disguised as space junk. Yet, if Quell got close, what then? A rotating single cannon turret topped the freighter and appeared to function. Two forward guns were listed as inactive, which might indicate a connection fault or might mean the barrels had been sold off for scrap a decade ago. The freighter had no missiles, and its shields were built to protect against radiation bombardment in high-energy star systems, not particle bolts. As a combat vehicle, it was suboptimal. A red line at the bottom of one of the system readouts caught her eye. She flipped a pair of switches on the console's underside and redistributed power until the red line turned green. The tractor beam was now operational. Quell allowed herself a smile. You're a disaster as a combat vessel, she thought. As a freighter, though, you're better than you look. She activated the internal comms.
Aiden, she said, if you want to try an escape pod, you've got 30 seconds before I start my run.
She ignited the freighter's thrusters in short bursts, maneuvering toward a chunk of spaceborne ice twice the size of the ship. Scanners indicated the meteoroid had a metallic core, ideal for what she had planned. Quell had the tractor beam powered by the time Aiden replied,
The escape pod doesn't even have a door. We're staying.
The freighter jerked as she activated the beam and sought to capture the meteoroid without being dragged in its wake.
You're sure?
She asked. She spoke softly enough that she barely heard the question herself, but there was no softness in her tone.
Are you planning to die?
Aiden asked.
No.
The comm went silent. Not that I have a plan to survive, exactly. She became acutely aware of the tension in her shoulders and arms, the pressure with which she gripped the freighter controls, and how her hips dug into the metal of her seat. She lit her thrusters again and tugged the meteoroid through the debris field until she had a direct path to the underside of the cruiser carrier. The Imperial vessel made no adjustments to its course and did nothing to bring its weapons to bear.
Check your harness, she said into the comm. Ido, make sure you're secure.
The freighter juddered and lurched as she increased power to the thrusters. Her instinct was to accelerate rapidly, but she couldn't risk letting the tractor beam tear the freighter apart. Instead, she focused on keeping the ship steady, adjusting energy distribution with one hand as she steered with the other. A Quasar Fire-class cruiser carrier incorporated four starfighter hangars into its undercarriage below its main reactor. Quell could see the ship's interior lighting past the hangar's magnetic fields. Removed from the battle near Troyth, ready to take the TIE squadrons aboard in case of emergency or retreat, the crew had chosen not to shut the bay doors. Under ordinary operating conditions, the decision would have been reasonable. As the freighter surged forward, Quell redirected the ship's power from thrusters into deflectors. Inertia would carry her most of the way to her destination. She toggled off port, aft, and rear screens until her forward shields channeled every erg of power the engine could provide. She wondered if that would suffice. She thought of her squadron, Lark, Tenzant, and Chaddock, battling an enemy they'd never beaten in a fair fight. Kairos in a suspension tube. Quell's relationship with the lot of them was over, all ties severed by the blade that had hovered at her throat since Traitor's Remorse. Still, she had been their commander. They deserved a chance more than she did. The sky became the gray of Imperial hull plating, or the gray of storm clouds on Necronus. The glow of the open hangar bays was Quell's guide beacon, and she wrestled with antique controls, attempting to correct miscalculations without overshooting her target, tapping analog levers and wrenching the control yoke. She returned her right hand to the tractor beam interface every 2 seconds, correcting for a power imbalance caused by an obvious malfunction she had no time to fix. Delicate adjustments became impossible as the ship bucked wildly, yet she had no choice but to try. She saw a flash of weapons fire, but it was too late for the cruiser carrier to stop the hangar bay from filling her vision, consuming her like the maw of a titanic beast. The freighter struck the magnetic screen. It was more like slamming into water from a 10-kilometer fall than like ramming Durasteel. There was give to the field, yet at high velocities that fact barely mattered. The sound was overwhelming. A low boom of pounding metal combined with higher shrieks and the crackle of energy across the hull. The electric popping of overstressed power conduits and shield oscillations. The console showed nothing but alerts and warnings. Convulsing in her harness, Quell couldn't see the status indicators for her deflector, but she knew it remained intact. It was the needle she used to penetrate the magnetic field, an energy weapon that served as well as any particle cannon. She clutched the controls, the tactile sensations barely reaching her brain as her head whipped forward and back. In another second, she'd know whether the freighter would survive the initial impact, but by then, further course adjustments would come too late. She had to match the level of the hangar bay, or she'd slam into a bulkhead, and she looked out onto the polished black floor and past the TIE deployment racks to judge her next move. She deactivated the tractor beam and struggled to correct her pitch. The sound of coruscating energy ceased. A gale buffeted the ship. The magnetic field had broken, and the air of the cruiser carrier was escaping into vacuum. The next part, she thought, with the light-speed efficiency of neural connections, will be difficult. The magnetic field and the gale had cut her velocity to near manageable levels. She swung 90 degrees, skimming the deck of the hangar with one wing, using it as a brake to slow her further. Pounding metal was joined by a grinding noise, and she spotted sparks out her viewport as she slid toward the hangar's rear wall. She risked taking a moment to slam a palm against the weapons controls, sending the freighter's gun turret spinning. It strafed the hangar, pumping particle bolts into bulkheads and heavy equipment at random. The console no longer displayed readings from most of the ship, and she was sure she'd torn off part of her sensor array, but that didn't impede her from completing her turn, orienting the freighter toward the open bay doors just as the meteoroid she'd been tugging came into view, following her like a bullet from a slingshot. She ignited her thrusters. The bedlam that followed made her crash through the magnetic field seem orchestrated as a symphony. She heard only a roar. She saw only darkness pierced by flashes of light. As much as she could, she steered to favor the dark, hoping that it would resolve into the comforting emptiness of space rather than the claustrophobic blackness of matter. Her body went numb from the ship's trembling. She'd done well. She'd completed the mission. Anything else was optional. She thought of her squadron, of Lark and Tenzant and Chaddock and Tonus and Barath and Zion. She closed her eyes. The freighter's convulsions settled. When she looked out the viewport again, she was free of the cruiser carrier. Firelight shone from above where explosions racked the enemy vessel. She couldn't tell how much harm she'd done. She doubted she'd inflicted fatal damage, but as she brought the freighter around in a wide arc and peered upward at the ruin of the hangars, she felt confident that the cruiser carrier was in no condition to jump to hyperspace. She hadn't saved the fighters over Troyth and Katadra, but she disrupted the enemy's plan. That was worth something. The cruiser carrier made no attempt to fire as she gained distance. She suspected the crew no longer considered her a priority. The portions of her console still functioning displayed nothing but red, yet miraculously, nothing aboard the freighter appeared catastrophically damaged. The engine was intact, and her life support systems were functional, albeit unlikely to remain so forever.
"Aiden," she said into the comm, "we're clear."
She was urging the freighter to re-enter the labyrinth of asteroids when a new alarm rang. Her scanner showed a ship in pursuit. Based on its size, a single TIE fighter. She breathed through parted lips as she reactivated the turret gun. She briefly wondered if the carrier had launched a full squadron, but more likely the TIE was astray, following its mothership from Katadra and arriving late. Her forward deflector was dead, but she diverted enough power to her rear screens to spark them back into existence. The freighter wouldn't be able to outmaneuver the TIE in the best of circumstances, yet she had enough thruster control to make a nuisance of herself. She tapped a button until the turret's targeting screen flickered online and gave her a view of the attacker. One shot was all she needed. She didn't have to destroy the TIE, just clip its wings and persuade it to return to the carrier. The range indicator counted down. Her hand felt slick with sweat around the control stick. She split her focus between the debris ahead and the TIE fighter behind, aware that either could kill her in an instant. For all her disdain of Tenzant, he would have been a useful co-pilot. The targeting computer chimed, and she squeezed the turret trigger as she banked to port. She expected the tie to drop away or detonate in a cloud of burning gas and metal. Instead, it spun laterally, one way and then the next, using impossibly precise thruster blasts and repulsor emanations to weave a chaotic web. Quell had no chance to compensate before the freighter screamed, particle bolts ripping apart its surviving wing and one of its maneuvering thrusters. Sirens went off as metal cracked open and exposed the interior to the vacuum of space. As the freighter spiraled through the debris field, the tie flashed past. The pilot didn't pause to finish his kill. He redirected his ship toward Troyth and left Quell and the freighter behind. She stared after him, replaying the tie's maneuvers in her mind. She knew the technique, had seen it played out hundreds of times. She'd studied videos and spoken to the pilot responsible, but she didn't comprehend how she was seeing him here and now. Major Soren Keats, her mentor, was alive. He'd broken his promise to leave Shadow Wing. He'd broken his promise to Quell. And now, he'd left her behind for a second time. Five. Soren Keys sped through the debris field, leaving the crippled freighter to careen among the rocks until it met its end. That enemy pilot would do no more damage. The casualties aboard the Aerie consumed a greater portion of his thoughts, but they could be mourned at another time, along with Cedia and Bregeer. His wingmates had fallen with the drones over Katadra. He would weep when no other member of the 204th was at risk. With the Aerie grievously damaged, Shadow Wing would be trapped in Cerberon, unless Soren could find another way out. The responsibility enveloped him, clinging tighter than his flight suit. He wondered if he'd led his people to their doom and forced the thought from his mind.
Colonel!
The comm unit inside his helmet buzzed. Soren recognized the voice of Major Rassus, stoic as always.
Report,
Soren said.
Status of the Aerie? Reactor meltdown has been averted, but engineering reports that the hull damage cannot be patched with the materials at hand. We're going to rapidly lose air over the next hour.
Soren frowned, checked his scanners, and adjusted his heading to circumnavigate a shard of broken moon covered in primitive vegetation.
How is that possible?
He asked. He knew it was a foolish question, particularly when time was short and the transmission was already growing distorted with distance. But losing oxygen aboard a ship the size of the cruiser carrier was such an archaic concern, it left him as stunned as if Rassus had worried about a tattered sail or a broken wheel. Rassus didn't hide his own distaste.
The primary magnetic field has been badly breached, as you know, and we're unable to seal off the damaged compartments. Insulation foam should be pumped into all gaps to compensate automatically, but we've been running short since the Auradol cluster. We don't have enough for more than 70% coverage.
Damnation, Soren thought, and was grateful he didn't say it aloud.
Escape pods and sublight drive systems?
He asked.
Ready and functional, respectively. We can limp most of the way to Troyth. We can't join the battle. Understood,
Soren said.
Get as far as you can before evacuating. After that?
What? He'd led Shadow Wing to Cerberon for revenge. Instead, the Ares escape pods would fall into New Republic hands. The soldiers he'd worked to win over, to inspire, would all rot in the new government's prison camps.
Await orders as long as possible. If the worst comes to pass, remember that the first responsibility of a prisoner is to escape.
There was no use obfuscating the truth. Rassus signed off. Soren was approaching the edge of the debris field now, and he peered at his scanners as the Edict, the Lodestar, and the Starfighters blinked onto his screen. He studied the patterns, watched the tactics used by friend and foe, and even before he had accessed the squadron's comm frequency, he was confident that the battle was playing out as designed. Bruch, Gablerone, and the other squadron leaders were operating conservatively, protecting their own against the enemy fighters and focusing their attacks on the Lodestar's point defense systems. The New Republic, meanwhile, had realized that the Edict was vulnerable to concentrated attacks and was focusing its efforts there. For the moment, the Edict was still intact. Sorin had the option of ordering a retreat, sending the fighters aboard the Star Destroyer, and hoping it could extract itself from the battle long enough to jump to lightspeed. It wasn't an impossible task, but the crew of cadets didn't give Sorin confidence. Even if the ploy proved successful, it would mean a total failure of the mission. The Lodestar would be left unbroken, General Syndulla would be left alive, and Sorin would have abandoned the crew of the Airy and sacrificed at least two soldiers for naught. There's no purpose in fighting an unwinnable battle, he reminded himself. Don't fall prey to the same desperation that brought the Empire to this point. Don't become Colonel Nerys and lead your people into fire because you can't accept that the war is over. He could see the gleaming streams of turbo lasers when he realized that one alternative remained.
Colonel Keyes to all forces.
He heard none of his anxiety reach his words. A decade of combat experience had given him that much.
Redouble your efforts against the Lodestar, but give it a clear line of retreat. When it begins to move toward Troyth, stay with it. Stay close. I will join you presently.
Six. Waves of ion energy rippled across the Star Destroyer's hull where Nath's torpedoes had impacted. Will admired the sight, like cloud formations, he thought. Even as he recognized that the destroyer was nearly finished, smoking and sparking from a dozen sections. Most of all, he focused on drawing the TIE fighter's fire away from Nath's Y-wing as the bomber completed its pass. Yet, as he whipped over and around and above the Y-wing, he was surprised that no particle bolts crossed his field of vision. He glanced toward his scanner and saw the nearest TIEs retreating toward the Lodestar. The Acclimator-class battleship had stopped broadcasting minutes earlier after its comm array had been damaged, but it was obvious at a glance what was going on. Hard-pressed by the enemy fighters, the Lodestar was moving toward Troyth and would arrive in orbit in under a minute.
Keep those TIEs off the Lodestar, Will called. Orbital defenses will take care of the destroyer, but our friends are done for if we don't help them.
One of the surviving X-Wing pilots signaled an affirmative. Another asked,
Any word from Meteor over Katadra?
If they were coming,
Nath answered,
they'd have gotten here by now. Listen to Lark and form a defensive globe around the Lodestar.
For tantalizing moments, Will flew through open space without fearing for his life. The Star Destroyer had almost entirely ceased its volleys, reluctant to unleash its turbo laser blasts while the TIE fighters swarmed the Lodestar. Its role was one of stalking predator, chasing the enemy to Troyth's shelter. The TIEs had already left Will's vicinity. He breathed deep and let the void of space stream around him, reveled in the directionless nothing surrounding him and his ship. Then he plunged back into the fight. If not for the shining orb of Troyth below, he would have believed himself back in the Auradal cluster. He remembered the last battle against Shadow Wing there. TIE fighters swarming around a New Republic carrier ship, the Hellion's Dare then, the Lodestar now. Spiraling around it from head to tail, and raking its hull while picking off the remaining New Republic starfighters. Will hadn't been able to mount a defense of his mothership then, and he wasn't sure this time would be any different. Already another pair of TIEs had locked onto him, chasing him across the Lodestar's wedge-shaped body. The other New Republic pilots, Will counted six of them, including himself and Nath, called out updates and targets and damage reports. This, too, was a difference from Auradal. There he had known each and every pilot and held back tears as they'd died. Now he was among strangers. He'd barely bothered to get to know Meteor or the pilots assigned to Troyth. Chas and Quell and Kairos, all of whom should have been with him, were gone.
Star Destroyer's not stopping,
Nath's voice boomed through the comm.
Gotta be coming into range of the satellite defenses by now.
The hull of the Lodestar sped above Will, and particle bolts splashed against plating as his pursuers narrowly missed him. He could have raced toward the planet, but that would have left the TIE's free to molest the battleship. If he slowed to allow Nath a chance to intercept, the TIEs would flank him and catch him in their crossfire. He scanned the horizon and spotted a billowing inferno spilling from the Lodestar's ventral power distributor, a poor omen for the battle, but his best hope. He braced against the G-forces and made for the flames. The inferno burned blue-white, fed by gases from the battleship's interior, and hot enough to turn hull-plating molten. Will didn't know how his shields would fare, but he was confident the TIEs would suffer worse. The light blinded him as he plunged in and he felt his canopy grow warm. Still, he dropped his speed, staying within the chemical furnace and praying the TIEs would outpace him. That if he survived the fires, he'd find the enemy waiting on the other side, perfectly positioned ahead of him as targets. He hoped neither of them was Blink. He burst out of the fire, spotted the TIEs, and squeezed his trigger. His shot went wide. Wide enough that he wondered if he'd damaged his cannons in the flames. But his foes veered off in response. He had time to feel half a second's worth of hope. Then the Lodestar's hull erupted in three places, shards of metal ripping free and expanding like halos around shafts of emerald light. Turbo laser beams that had pierced the great battleship and washed the galaxy in their sickly hue. A shockwave of oxygen and debris struck Will's A-Wing, and he attempted to wrest control as he tumbled away. He heard oaths and curses over the comm, and heard a woman cry, "Lodestar down! Lodestar down!" He knew it was true. The Star Destroyer was out of sight above the battleship. The combatants had crossed into Troyth's upper atmosphere during the fight, and the etched patterns of cities decorated the continent far below. The tug of gravity was weak, but it was enough to cause the broken Lodestar to dip, coaxing the massive vessel toward the planet. Will fought away a haze of uncertainty. He didn't know what to do, but Nath was still alive, fighters were still active. He picked the nearest target on his scanner and swept in to engage. The TIEs were staying close to the Lodestar as it fell, and he didn't understand why. Nor did he understand the bright flares far above him. Past the Lodestar, too brilliant to be starfighter weaponry.
"She's been avenged,"
Nath said, steady through the calm.
"What?"
Will asked.
"Orbital defenses hit the Star Destroyer. Got too close while dealing the coup de grace to the Lodestar. Going down."
Will mindlessly shot at a TIE and imagined the two warships plummeting to the surface of Troyth. "It's happening again," he thought. And felt as much as remembered the gas mining stations dropping to Pandem 9. The city's endangered because of the squadron's vendetta against Shadow Wing. He envisioned Lodestar and Star Destroyer burning through the atmosphere and demolishing kilometers of skyscrapers and housing blocks and cultural centers. Next, he remembered the shields. Troyth was not Pandem 9. It was built to repel orbital bombardments. Aiden's whole plan had relied on it. Will didn't know if that meant the shields could survive the fall of two capital ships, but he could hope. Seven. The TIE fighters had entered atmosphere, and a steady rain of trailing embers and smoking metal fell from above. Sorin had flown through worse conditions, but not often, and he had to grip his control yoke tighter than he'd like against the violent shaking of his vessel. A TIE LN's hull plating and viewport were less a barrier to open space and more a membrane surrounding their pilot. That was the beauty of the ship that no Rebel starfighter could match. And as good a reason as any why Sorin had never accepted permanent assignment to a more powerful TIE interceptor. The standard model TIE was a weapon a pilot wielded as he soared through the sky. Yet there was no escaping the disadvantages when an environment became hostile.
keep your fighters steady,
he said, and suppressed a groan as his vessel bounced and he nearly bit off the tip of his tongue.
Remain in position relative to the warships.
The squadron commanders acknowledged one by one. The voices of Bruch and Gablerone, Dorita and Fesh, Husser and Wisp came through, each giving Soren strength to continue, a cause worth hoping for. Each voice deepened his fear that he was only digging their graves. The edict burned above him, the Star Destroyer's thrusters failing and its repulsors struggling to keep it aloft in atmosphere. Still had led Nenvez and his cadets through the battle and performed better than Soren had ever expected, but heroic efforts couldn't save the vessel now. As its deflectors and heat shields failed and hull plating tore free to expose internal machinery, its decay accelerated to unthinkable speeds. Soren had authorized the crew to evacuate, though he suspected Still, who had sacrificed the cruiser carrier Allegiance to permit the edict's rebirth, and who would have no role to play if they survived Cerberon, might insist on staying till the end. He hoped the man did not. Below Soren was the Lodestar, launching escape pods like missiles as it too burned. The Acclimator-class battleship had not only suffered thruster failure, but lost one of its drive modules as the vessel crumbled to pieces. Soren did not imagine that General Syndulla would go down with her ship, as Still might with his. Maybe during her rebel days, he thought, but not when she could find a command anywhere in the New Republic fleet. Between Lodestar and Edict was the TIE Swarm, still under periodic and futile attack by the New Republic starfighters. Those enemy craft were an inconvenience more than a serious threat. But even an inconvenience could prove fatal in trying circumstances.
Lodestar approaching planetary shield, sir,
Husser called through the comm. Soren checked his altitude before peering out the viewport. He could see a faint shimmer of distortion extending across the glittering darkness of the cityscape. He tried to recall the technical specifications of the Troyth shields. He'd spent hours culling through reports and manuals as they'd planned the mission, learned exactly what sort of bombardment they could sustain. But he was guessing now at the payload. The mass of the Lodestar, multiplied by its velocity, as derived from Troyth's gravity, and the counterforce of the repulsors, and the distance it had already fallen. Someone could have run the numbers. Soren couldn't. Not in the moment. An X-Wing flashed toward him, firing its four cannons as its bulk spun and hopped in the gale wake of the Lodestar. With a grimace of annoyance, Soren opened his throttle, fought inertia and atmosphere to rotate the TIE toward his foe, and dispatched the enemy. Add the X-Wing to the payload. When the Lodestar hit the shield seconds later, Soren felt the sonic shockwave through the membrane of his ship, through flight suit and flesh. His TIE was forced upward as a caldera of flame and smoke and metal, and a part of Soren's mind reminded him organic matter rose and expanded with the liquid motion of a raindrop striking a cockpit canopy and the destructive might of a plasma bomb. He spared a glance down as his ship tumbled and saw the flames washing across air, the dark central mass of the battleship fixed in place while smaller sections skittered across the dome of the planetary deflector. It's holding.
Now,
he cried, no longer concealing the urgency or desperation in his voice.
Go!
The sky fell as the TIEs scattered. In the eternal night of Cerberon, the plunging edict cast no shadow. Instead, the fiery light from below reflected off the destroyer's hull, bathing the world in infernal radiance. Was this what Pandem Nigh was like? Soren wondered as he sped after his comrades, clearing the area for the second impact. The shockwave was stronger this time, and the tidal wave of fire rose over the fighters as they tumbled 50 meters above the planetary shield. Soren saw one of his pilots dip and skirt the energy barrier, one of the TIE's wings shredding before the vessel erupted in a flash. A second TIE whirled through the air and was blasted by a Y-wing. A Y-wing? Clumsiest of all the rebel fighters, as it attempted to regain control, He held his breath as he glanced behind him at the widespread wreckage of the two battleships and strained to see the flickering of the shield. For a moment, the central remains of the two warships seemed to sink, as though they'd found rest in the silk marshes of Necronus. It might have been an optical illusion, Soren's desperate hope combined with the heat shimmer of the air, but it gave him solace. What occurred next was unmistakable. A clap-like thunder rent the air, and the planetary shield rippled back in an expanding circle, seeming to sublime. The ruins of the Lodestar and the Edict now spread in a 2-kilometer radius, dropped toward the city.
Down!
Soren called.
Down!
He switched off thrusters and repulsors and felt buoyant as the tie fell. He forced himself to keep his attention on the console rather than the world outside the cockpit, and saw his squadrons changing altitude as he did. 2 seconds later, he reactivated his equipment and took the jolt as the fighter leveled out. Above him, the sky was rippling again as the planetary shield reformed.
All squadrons, descend to the city and begin your attack runs. Keep the enemy on the defensive. Do not let them coordinate a counteroffensive, and do not hold position longer than necessary.
The TIEs were already fanning out, scattering across the urban expanse. Soren paused before adding,
"The next several hours, maybe the next days or weeks, we'll be trying. But you are the best the Empire ever produced. You are the 204th Fighter Wing. You will survive and you will triumph."
The squadrons raced through the steel canyons. Trapped beneath the reformed shield barrier, it was the only real choice they had. But that was part of the plan. Soren wasn't certain what would become of the Edict and the Ares escape pods, but their navigation systems were smart enough to avoid smashing directly into the shield. The crews had a chance at survival, and a slim chance was better than none. Shadow Wing could not leave Troy. Shadow Wing could not leave the system. But General Syndulla's flagship was gone. The forces protecting Cerberon had been devastated. Retribution had been exacted for the pilots who lived and for those who had died above Pandem Nai. There would still be time to escape. Soren Keynes could still redeem himself. Part 2. Over the Abyss. Chapter 13. Shadows at Dusk. 1. The TIEs had vanished like a flock of grazing birds disturbed by a passing land speeder. The surviving New Republic pilots, and there were barely a handful, tore after the enemy squadrons, aware that they were outmatched, but determined to track the foe before they disappeared into the city. Will stayed at Nath's side as the Y-Wing skirted the rooftops of unlit towers, damaged repulsors flickering online and off. He was concerned about T5. If the ship had taken a hit, was the Astrotech damaged too? But he knew better than to distract Nath with questions while they were struggling for survival. Instead, he listened to calls coming through on the New Republic military comm channel. Emergency signals from shield generator stations and makeshift military bunkers. Urgent requests from the spaceport for a status report on the Lodestar.
"Lodestar is down,"
Will replied when no one else spoke.
"We've got a few fighters left. Who's in charge of the ground defenses?"
The woman on the other end of the comm laughed.
"What ground defenses? We blew up the anti-air weapons on the way to the capital. Unless you want the infantry to shoot TIEs with their rifles."
Nath's voice broke in.
"Got it,"
he called.
"Damn piece of shrapnel still sticking out the side of my ship, but we rerouted the power."
"What do you need?"
Will asked. Maybe to the woman at the spaceport, maybe to both of them. The woman didn't hesitate.
"Give me a point of contact. If we lost the Lodestar, Meteor Leader should be in charge."
"Gone,"
Nath said.
"Maybe Alphabet Leader? Lieutenant Quell."
"Gone,"
Nath repeated. Will winced at the callousness of Nath's tone. Quell could be alive, Enough escape pods had launched that it was possible. Chass and Meteor Squadron as well. He swung the A-Wing in sight of Nath and set course after the largest cluster of TIEs. He tried to listen to the conversation while scanning other distress calls, pulling up maps of Troyth and estimating flight times. He tuned out Nath and the spaceport operator altogether as he caught a fragment of transmission, a cry for help from Banner House, where the New Republic had established a supply depot for the infantry invasion of the capital.
Take a look at these coordinates,
Will said, and sent the particulars to Nath.
TIEs are en route there. I'd say it's our priority. Sister in the spaceport just said to protect the shield generators in case of a follow-up attack.
It didn't sound like an argument so much as a statement of fact.
You've seen Banner House,
Will answered.
It's still densely populated, even after the flooding. If you want to split off, we can cover more ground.
Not an issue. You save Banner House, I'm with you.
Will cycled through transmissions again. Shadow Wing was hitting 6 targets already and moving toward 4 more. 1 New Republic fighter per target wasn't enough to make a stand.
I'm accelerating to top speed,
he said.
Catch up as soon as you can.
Will listened to the reports from the Banner House district as he flew.
3 of them on the scanner now. We're trying to evacuate the civilians. They're firing on the dams. They're trying to flood us out. Rebel ground team is trying to get a bead on them. We've got 1 Plex missile, but we'll do what we can.
He saw the flare of cannon fire reflected on the water as he approached. Nath was minutes behind him, but Will centered a blip on his scanner and raced toward his target, firing long before he had any chance of scoring a hit. Destroying the enemy was secondary to stopping their attacks, and he knew they would come for him. They did. All 3 TIEs abandoned their objectives and, as one, spread out to force him into their field of fire. Any TIE he locked onto would flee, he knew. If he attempted to pursue, the others would chase him and position themselves for a killing shot. His A-Wing had no meaningful edge when it came to speed or maneuverability in a close quarters melee, and his shields would fall rapidly against a barrage from multiple opponents. So instead of fighting, Will dived for shelter, skirting between buildings and skimming the water, limiting the angles from which the TIEs could attack. They shot at him anyway, and he panted in dismay as their particle bolts tore through squat cantinas and makeshift canal locks built of sandbags and energy field projectors. He led the TIEs through narrow corridors and skipped across the surface of the lake, battering his body against his cockpit and leaving a trail of steam and froth behind him. When he saw water churned by particle volleys overturn a distant raft with the stick figure of a man aboard, he cried out and pitched toward the sky again. Quell would have told him to deactivate his thrusters, to drop and reposition and fire at the TIEs from below, or to shoot one of his 2 remaining missiles into the lake and take advantage of the resulting wave. But Will had learned to fly from the Seraphkas of home, and he was too worn and weary to concoct some technical trick. He flew upward, straining his bones as particle bolts flashed around him. His console flared and whined as his shields collapsed. From a position of perfect vertical ascent, he jerked at his controls and tilted the nose of the A-Wing backward, flipped the vessel over, and hurtled down toward the TIEs and the lake. Blood rushed to his head, and he fired wildly as blasts tore into his wings, felt the agony as though sharing sensation with his ship, and tried to laugh as the TIEs scattered. He was certain he'd hit one, not full on, not enough to destroy it, but he'd done something. Sparks rained onto his canopy as he pulled up to avoid slamming into the lake. He heard the screams of the TIE's engines change pitch as a deeper rumble joined the cacophony. He was too dizzy to see as he ascended gently, attempting to keep the wounded A-Wing from veering to one side. But the voice came through clearly.
You make moves like that, I'll keep hammering while they stare.
Will risked blinking and let his eyes focus on his scanner as he flew in a broad spiral toward the sky.
Where'd they go?
he asked. Nath answered almost before Will finished speaking.
They went away. Take a breather. No one died, so call it a victory.
The A-Wing bobbed in the air, repulsors active but thrusters cool, the whole ship askew by 10 degrees and forcing Will to shift uncomfortably in his seat. There was a tangible silence he attributed at first to the stillness of his vessel. Then he realized that sometime during the battle, all calm chatter had stopped. The sweat soaking his clothes stank faintly of iron. He searched through frequencies for anything but static.
Nat, I'm not getting any signals.
And you're not going to.
We have to get to the next target,
Will said. He assumed he'd heard Nath wrong.
We need the coordinates of...
Pretty sure global comm rigs are down, brother. Enemy squadrons must have hit them first thing. So long as we're planetside, it's short range only, unless you've got one impressive transmitter tucked under your chair.
Will shivered, pulled himself up the slant of his seat, and tightened his harness.
So we work from last known enemy destinations. Spaceport, shield generators, bunkers.
He tapped at his console and pulled up a set of low-resolution maps. Without data from the Lodestar or a New Republic ground base, he'd be limited to whatever was stored aboard the A-Wing, enough to navigate by, with classified data limited in case of capture.
Flying at low altitude, we're maybe 20 minutes from one of the secondary spaceports. Could be a target.
Could be,
Nath agreed, with the phlegmatic tone of a tutor humoring a student.
Unless you want to return to the primary,
Will asked.
The whole refugee camp is probably in crisis. Most of the military personnel moved out a few days back, but Aiden's analysts were staying in the tower.
Don't think that's a good idea.
Nath!
Will!
The bass of his voice was cut with static.
You think this is all real urgent, I know, but you're panicking.
I am, Will thought, but it doesn't matter. He tried to speak. Nath kept talking.
Give me 60 seconds to make my case,
Nath said.
It's all I need.
Will nodded briskly, as if Nath could see him.
Basics first. We're outnumbered and outgunned. Meteor Squadron hasn't made it back from Katadra, and I'm doubting they will. Syndulla and Vanguard Squadron could be gone for weeks, and the ground situation's about to get worse. Troth's Imperial holdouts don't have much in the way of air power. But we left a lot of stormtroopers out there after taking down Governor Hastemore. They're gonna use this chance to act. They're also going to be backed by whatever 2, 10, 40% of the population still supports the Empire. There's going to be rioting and chaos, and any new Republic allies on the ground will have their hands full.
Will listened to Nath's voice, grave and easygoing at once, and noticed how cold his wet outfit really was. His flight suit had been designed to absorb sweat as little as possible, but he was still in civvies. Nath went on.
Now, we can keep flitting around, but we've both taken damage, and I don't think we'd last an hour. My suggestion is we fly real low to avoid detection and try to pick up local comm signals. Find support where we can, make a plan after there's more than two of us.
The idea was repulsive. Shadow Wing was attacking, and if Alphabet did as Nath suggested, they'd be abandoning the Empire's victims.
I hate it,
Will said.
I bet.
Will laughed hoarsely.
All right,
he answered.
All right.
He wanted to tear his helmet off and toss it into the lake. He wanted to stare into a sun that didn't exist in Cerberon and warm himself and dry his sweat.